The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today, return guest, Carl Dixon of CapturePlanning.com and PropLibrary.com. Carl, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mark.
Lots of neat stuff going on here. You know, the RFP for Alliant is finally out. And Lord knows they're going to be scrambling for that one because we're talking, what, $60 billion? So I'm not going to ask you who you're working with on there because I know you probably have a handful of folks. But tell people, and that leads great to this question, tell people who you are and what you do.
Okay. The name's Carl Dixon, and my business breaks down in two ways. I have an online resource called Prop Library where I publish material that contractors use to increase their win rates. And that's kind of a do-it-yourself resource. So people can go there and get the information and tools that they need to increase their win rate without potentially having to use consultants. But then some of my customers want the hands-on help and want somebody to come out and work with them. So for customers that need something more than do-it-yourself solutions, we also provide the consulting services.
Okay. So you're Florida-based, but you're up here in D.C. On a very regular basis. And thank you for spending a little bit of your time in D.C. with me. Always appreciated. Should note that Carl has a very popular group on LinkedIn. You may belong to it and still not know him. Business development, capture planning. Lord knows how many. You did a great SEO job with the title of the group, but it's got like 35,000 or so members.
Yeah. If you just do a keyword search for proposal writing, it should come up as number one.
There you go. And you're also obviously on LinkedIn in your newsletter, which you can subscribe to from Prop Library or Capture Planning, goes out to. Suffice it to say, just a few, 80,000 or so.
We're not to 80,000 yet, but we're closer to the 70,000 mark.
Okay. Regardless, that's not half bad. So, we're going to be talking as Carl and I do, or he will, and I'll just ask questions about the bid and proposal capture BD. Processes. So, to begin with, Carl, we were talking before we went on the air about the need to for companies to update their processes. There's been, you know, this plug in a name, something certified proposal person for years and years, and you know, I speak at the APMP event, so I pick up their mouse pad every year, and it's the one I have on my desk from 20 years ago is identical to the one they have today. So when you say it's necessary for companies to update their internal processes, what do you mean?
Since I'm getting old now and I've been in the business for a couple of decades and God, it hurts to say that. You get a sense of deja vu when new things come out like content marketing or social networking, and people spend a couple of years, you know, fretting over whether they should be doing those things, you know, in their business development and capture efforts. It turns out that those things aren't really something new, but something that you should be incorporating as standard operating procedure. They're just an extension of relationship marketing. So what, you know, companies need to do to bring their processes up to date isn't so much add on a layer of the newest buzzwords so much as it is to look at how something like content marketing or social networking can extend your reach and improve your ability to practice the good old-fashioned relationship marketing. You know, it used to be people would spend all day long working the phones, okay, or you know, walking the halls.
Let me give you a for instance.
Yeah.
I've been married for 23 years now, 24 years now. When I was dating my wife, her cousin came over for dinner one day, and I'm sitting there reading Federal Computer Week with a highlighter, and I'm highlighting the names of key people that I will need to look up in my hard copy Carroll Federal Executive Directory, and then figure out a way to get my clients in front of them. You're laughing at me, but you know, it happened, man.
But adding something brand new to that, like LinkedIn.
Yep.
You're really doing the same process, except now instead of flipping through, you know, a 3-inch thick book, you're just you know, going to LinkedIn in order to type the name in. And now you've got access to a lot more information and you can get it more quickly. You know, so it's really about being able to do things that you couldn't do before, like get in front of the customer by sending them information or inviting them to an information resource that they can find helpful. You know. And so you know so bringing your processes up to date with the technology is really about extending your reach, taking advantage of ways to do the same old things, but now you can do them more effectively.
Okay. So you mentioned content a couple of times in there, and a lot of companies are still not simply behind the curve, but kind of, you know, just lost when it comes to content development and then content sharing. What types of content should they be thinking about doing?
I just wrote an article for my newsletter last week that was titled 28 Pieces You Should Have in Your Pre-RFP Content Library. And the way I wrote that piece was I just thought about all the conversations that I've had with customers where they've said about their customer when the RFP finally came out and they're like, why'd they do that? Why'd they write it that way? This is the worst RFP ever. And what I'm thinking is it's the worst RFP ever because you didn't help them when they were writing it. Why didn't you fix it then instead of wait until now when all you can do is complain about it? And the way you do it, which was a lot harder in the past. With content marketing now, you can publish material that tells the customer about how to make trade-offs that impact the type of work that you do. Or you can publish information that resolves the kind of problems that you see showing up in the RFPs that you're bidding. And you can put that information in front of the customer because they're easy to reach electronically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can help the customer write better RFPs, which is part of how you go about influencing the RFP. So it's really the same stuff, relationship building by helping people and gaining influence that ultimately works to your advantage. But now you're doing it with a new label on it called content marketing, and you're taking advantage of electronic access.
Okay, so you have your website where you can post stuff, case studies, white papers, webinars, you know, if you blog. But, you know, for some companies, you know, they maintain that, well, we do IT services. All right, so does that mean that 100% of your money comes from unnamed IT services, or does 70% of your money come from a particular type of IT service, and what do you bring to that party?
I think the last thing you said is the most important. What do you bring to the party? What's special about you? What's your differentiators? Why should the customer care about you? I'm sure there are really good reasons, but you have to articulate them so that the customer becomes aware of them. And the reason there are reasons why you conduct your IT services the way you do. It's better the way you do it than the way other people do it. So with content marketing, what you're doing is showing the customer better ways to do things so that they'll know that you're insightful and have good judgment and are the kind of contractor that they want working on their projects. So you write about better ways to do things. They still need to come to you to get them done. And especially if you can write about those better ways of doing things in a way that the customer can then incorporate into the specifications of the RFP, now you're focusing the competitive playing field on people on only the people who can do things the way you do it, and that's how you gain advantage.
Okay. Now, the piece that you just talked about, was it 28 pieces? Okay. Is that in the newsletter that I got yesterday?
Or the week before.
Well, if it was in the week before, I would have seen it and I would have put it in my newsletter last week.
Then it's sitting in your inbox.
Okay. Then I'll send it out Monday with the new newsletter. So it doesn't go to as many as yours, but it does go to 9,000 other people. So we'll see what's what. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I will be back with Carl right after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Carl Dixon. You can find him at captureplanning.com and proplibrary.com. If you want to see content in action, go to proplibrary.com. One of the reasons I use, I have a newsletter that goes out to all the members of my LinkedIn groups every week. And Carl is in just about every issue because I write a lot. He writes a heck of a lot more than I do. But there's always something really good up at his website, and I provide the link to that. I don't repost the article. I put the link. So 28 ways. But let's get back to the process portion of what companies need to do. So basically you're saying that the processes they have in place may not simply need some tweaking, but some radical thought, or both?
The ultimate goal is to improve your win rate.
Yeah.
So making sure that your process is fully integrated to achieve that goal ends up being super critical. So you take something like we talked about in the previous segment with content marketing. All right. Plays a role in pre-RFP pursuit, can play a role in qualifying your customers as well as in the capture portion of pre-RFP pursuit. And then once the RFP comes out and you get into the proposal phase, the material that you've written for content marketing is the same material that you need available to describe your positioning within the proposal. So your approach to positioning, your approach to differentiation starts off in your strategic planning, flows through your pre-RFP processes and takes the form of things like content marketing, which is really just a portion of your relationship marketing. Mm-hmm. So it's guiding your entire relationship marketing and how you qualify your and pursue your leads. And continues to provide guidance all the way into the proposal phase, providing that linkage from your proposal through capture and business development all the way back to strategic planning.
Okay. Now, I want to touch one item there. We mentioned earlier that, rather than you read about somebody, you look them up on LinkedIn. You can do it with contractors. You can do it with feds. But there's 1.6 million feds on LinkedIn. very, very rarely do I read about someone and not find them on LinkedIn from either side of that universe. So you mentioned the win rate, and oddly enough, that's our next topic. So the importance of the win rate is critical, because if your win rate isn't high, you're spending a lot of money on the proposal process, the BD proposal capture process, that's useless.
A lot of companies shoot themselves in the foot when they treat business development capture and proposals as expenses, as costs. If you raise your win rate by 10%, for most companies, that will be the equivalent of adding 30 to 40% more leads. So, and that's just one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, given the leads that you have, if you raise your win rate 10%, you may very well be able to increase by 50 to 100% your revenue, a 50 to 100% revenue gain on the same number of leads. So that's why win rate is so powerful. The challenge is, wow, raising your win rate by 10%. Most companies don't know how to do that. But when you integrate your processes and you start with solid strategic planning, and you update your processes so that you're not just simply talking about relationship management, but you've taken it in the form of content management, and you've incorporated social networking so that you can actually reach people in ways you never could before, it actually becomes feasible to raise your win rate by that much. And so instead of focusing on BD capture and proposals as expenses to be minimized, okay, you know, you get rid of all your senior staff, you go with junior staff wherever you can, and try to spend as little as possible on it. Instead, you should treat it like an investment. It's an ROI equation. If you can raise your win rate, the odds are a small, tiny change in win rate more than covers any added investment that might be required in BD capture and proposals. A small change in win rate has a huge impact in revenue on the back end. And if you're really concerned with, you know, growing, then, and if you're really concerned with profitability, you'll get there faster by increasing your top level number with the same number of leads than you will by trying to minimize the amount of effort you put into BD capture and proposals.
Okay. So the win rate isn't just for emerging contracts. The win rate should be applied also to existing vehicles that you're on that have task order business. Is that?
Absolutely. When I do a pipeline assessment and win rate analysis for a company, we might look at the RFPs, but if they're pursuing an IDIQ, we'll set up a whole subset of that data for each one of those IDIQs and then maybe roll it up into to a collective, because your win rate in pursuing task orders is telling you what your ROI for having that IDIQ is. And if you have multiple IDIQs, multiple contract vehicles, they may have different ROIs. In fact, they probably almost certainly do. So that can help you decide which IDIQ or which contract vehicle you want to steer your customers towards.
Okay. Anything else about win rates?
Build your entire company around it. It should be your obsession, your you know, focus, if you care about growing, right? It's not about finding
growing or profitability.
Yeah, it's not about, you know, I want to grow, so I need to find more leads. It's what are you putting in your pocket? And if you don't already have a spreadsheet that shows you the math, then create one right now and see this math in progress, because this is all very quantifiable. This isn't just this isn't just Carl's opinion, all right? Mathematically, the win rate is an extremely highly leveraged number.
Okay. So for your clients, what is a healthy win rate?
Depends on what market they're in. Okay. I've seen companies that were healthy at 20%, even lower. But I've also seen companies getting as high as 80%+.
Is that because of the selectivity, the talent on the team, or a combination?
A combination of those two with the fact that they provided a highly specialized service. So it was very easy to position themselves as one of the very few who were capable of delivering, you know, in that area.
Okay. Any other factors involved in that?
How effective you are at doing your homework. Most of what goes into building a win rate is stuff you already know you should do. You just haven't figured out how to do it yet. And one of the things that I tell people, I show people, I teach people, or that you can see when you go to the prop library, is that those things can be done. You just haven't found the right approach to actually achieving them yet.
Okay. Well, we're going to get into that kind of research after the break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Again, you can find Carl on LinkedIn, but you can also find them at captureplanning.com and proplibrary.com. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. My guest today is Carl Dixon. Carl is the prop guru, the proposal guru, capture and BD guru. Has been for a while. Find them at proplibrary.com and captureplanning.com. Carl, earlier on, you and maybe it was before we were on air, you mentioned the deep dive on what we were discussing is, you know, how do you grow business? And my take has always been it's much easier for a company to sell where they are known than to migrate to new fields. And I'm not talking about leaving the government market. I'm talking about maximizing the dollar value of a particular agency before you move on. But there's a flip side to that coin. So I want you to talk about both sides of that coin.
Yeah. I'm an analytics junkie. I really love pouring through all the numbers and puzzling through it. So the way I approach a question like that is to get the data and look at, you know, where do I have the best potential to sell what it is I offer? So which customers buy the most of that? Is it within the agency where I'm currently at, or is there another agency that I might want to migrate to that buys more of what I sell? It's a little bit more complicated than that because you also have to look at the competitive environment and contract vehicles and all of those factors before you make the assumption that you'll be capable of prospering in some other environment. But you should definitely start from an analysis of, you know, which customer has the biggest potential for you. And then it becomes a matter of how do you best position within each of those environments? And then that pulls us right back into the discussion we just had about win rates and how to maximize your win rate in that environment.
Okay. So that's going to apply really to both. So you can take a deep look at your current customer, see what the value is, or you can look elsewhere. But one of the tools you use, and we don't discuss it very often here on AmTower Off Center, is the Federal Procurement Data System. So why do you use it? What do you find? And how do you leverage that information for your clients?
FPDS is the largest single repository of this kind of data
contract data.
Yes, that exists. And it's not easy to use. It's really challenging. But learning it gives you direct access to the best data. And when you look at many of the databases and products that are being sold, most of them are really putting, you know, just putting a better user interface on top of FPDS data. Although they may draw from other sources as well, the core of it always ends up being FPDS.
Yeah. Okay. So I remember long, long time ago, Eagle Eye Publishing, Paul Murphy's company, used to massage the data, and their two biggest customers were Federal Sources and Input, who didn't want to massage the data, but they put a front end on it. So, that was FPDS data. And now we're going back to, you know, the late 80s, mid 80s. And it's the same data. But what, you know, if I'm looking at a particular type of technology, am I going to search by the SIN? Am I going to search by the PSC? Am I going to search by a NAICS code? And what am I going to find?
Probably search for all three to see what the overlap is between them, mm-hmm. because you don't want to overlook potentially relevant data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to find not only, well, you're building a strategic plan.
Right.
Okay, it's not just about FPDS, but it's really about what do you need to build a strategic plan, and then that's just a data source for it. So one of the things you need to know is what's the size of the markets you're in, what are the size of other markets you might be able to move into, what are the competitive factors. So it's not just looking up who buys what you sell, but it's also looking up who also is selling that same thing to that customer. So who will you be competing with? And then looking at thing, you know, you can drill all the way down to which contracts do you want to target? Do you, you know, want to take a recompete strategy? One of the problems with FPDS and most of the data available is it's easy to find the recompetes, but there is no data trail for new procurements. Okay. So, you know, you have to, that's where the whole relationship marketing angle comes in. If you only build off of the data, you're only looking backwards at what they used to buy. If you're looking for what they're going to buy, well, some of that will be recompeted, some of it won't, and some of it will be new. And the only way you're going to know about the new stuff is if you're practicing relationship marketing. And if you are using things like social networking and content marketing to extend your reach, to have interactions with the customers about the things that are coming up. So that through those interactions, you can gain some insight into what they're doing. If you just show up and knock on the door and say, what are you buying this year? You know, what customer wants to deal with a salesman, you know, knocking on your door saying that?
Yeah.
But if you're publishing information that's helping them, you know, go through the acquisition process to get ready for RFP release, then, you know, they're far more likely to want to interact with you and give you the information that you need in order to you know what's coming down, you know, in the pipeline.
Okay. Now, do you, for seeing what's coming down the pipeline, are you using the OMB filings? The 53s or the 300s?
You know, there are many sources, you know, that included. But, you know, I really, you know, like to get direct customer interaction, as much of an analytics junkie as I am.
Human.
But the challenge is knowing, you know, which customers do you want to interact with?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I start with the data, figure out which customers I want to target for interactions. And then I those interactions, that's not just cold calling. Okay. That's one of the beautiful things about something like content marketing is with content marketing, the content is their first interaction. And when you speak with them on the phone or email or connect with them on LinkedIn, it's not a cold contact anymore because they've already been looking at the things that you've published.
Right. Quick aside on LinkedIn. One of the ways I measure if somebody is a player in the market is how many connections we share. Okay. That also applies to people in the government. And I mentioned seeing Steve Cooper yesterday, the CIO from Commerce. I went to an event to see him speak, wanted to make sure that I was on his radar because he's been invited to be on the show. And he should be on the show within the next month or so if Commerce Communications gives him dispensation to do so. I certainly hope they do. But Steve and I share over 500 connections on LinkedIn. So here is a senior Fed, a guy who has been in and out of government for 40 years, who is leveraging this tool. And Steve is you know, age-wise, a peer of mine. He's not a nipper. And he's there.
And just from that one little fact, you know that he networks. He interacts with people. If you looked up somebody on LinkedIn and they, you know, worked for a federal agency that you're targeting, but they had no contacts in common, then you know you're trying to get to a person that may not do a whole lot of interacting or networking. So your whole strategy has to be different.
Yeah. And again, you know, the relationship side, you know, government marketing best practices came out in 2005. First seminar was back in 2000. The premise of it was this is a relationship-driven market. The deeper you go into the market, so if you go from civilian to DOD to Intel, in Intel, it's like relationships on steroids. Typical marketing activities do not work in the Intel community. If you do not know them, if they do not know you, you're just not going to do work.
Yeah, the Intel community being you know, very, very tight-knit, sheltered market with limitations on how it interacts electronically. Mm. But at other agencies, you know, that whole relationship marketing thing, it's much more broader than you might think. You know, you can interact with people, you know, via social networking now. You can make contact, you can discover them, you know, through social networking, and you know, you can follow up with content marketing and do all of this, you know, electronic interaction as a prelude to you're picking up the phone and calling them or interacting face to face. So that's really why we started off in the first segment talking about upgrading your processes, because if you just think of relationship marketing as picking up the phone and calling somebody, who do you know? And you're not thinking about it as who can you reach, who can you get to online or otherwise, or who follows the things that you publish, or, you know, who can you send this information to? All right. That's really, when we talk about relationship marketing, we're talking about all of those activities collectively. And so if you're just practicing relationship marketing using the telephone, you're not reaching as far as you could.
Yep. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Carl after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is and has been, will still be, Carl Dixon of CapturePlanning.com and PropLibrary.com. So, Carl, key metrics for contractors to focus on. I had a client, I worked with a research firm a few years back, and, you know, all they do is research in 12 stovepipes in the government. Client will be unnamed. But once I got them involved in social media to the point where their profiles were robust and they had actually shown their particular areas of expertise, I got them to start posting stuff on their profiles. And even though the hits were light, I had a couple of them telling me they were winning task order business because of that activity. So what kind of metrics does a contractor need to focus on?
Government contracting, as we all know, is very different. When you look up a subject like marketing metrics or content marketing or social networking, if you just Google those words, you're going to get a lot of advice that's just not applicable to government contracting. You know, so for a government contractor, for example, you know, you don't need an audience that you know is you know has you don't need 70,000 people subscribing to your newsletter
unless you're CDW and you sell everything.
You know, right? But if you are like most business developers and you've got maybe a dozen, maybe two dozen customers in your portfolio, you know, and those are the people that you're trying to get the attention of, then the total size of the audience you need might be two dozen, you know, those people. Now you might have to cast a wider net to get to those, you know, key people. But it's really, you know, for your goals in conducting marketing, it's not a mass market approach. Okay, it's about getting the attention of the people who matter to your ability to capture those pursuits. So, you know, when you publish content, you're not publishing content for mass market consumption. You're not trying to get more hits on your website. Okay, you're not doing it for the SEO value. You could care less about that stuff. You're publishing content that matters to you know, to the customers that you're trying to get in front of. And when you do that effectively, when you publish content targeted at those customers, then it becomes part of the overall integration of your business development efforts from the strategic planning through the pre-RFP into the proposal, where it's all about positioning. Okay. So the materials that you're publishing are positioning according to your strategic plan and delivering a message to your customer in the pre-RFP phase that you're going to return to during the proposal phase. But by publishing that information, you're describing your positioning and your value, and that can help differentiate your company, you know, especially when you're in a competitive playing ground where there's lots of other companies offering similar services.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for a government contractor, it's not about how big your audience is. It's about how well targeted, whether you're getting in front of the right people and whether that is delivering the message, you know, the messages that will position you to win. And those messages generally revolve around your differentiators. So really that whole, you know, everything about positioning, everything about value is about showing the customer through what you publish, you know, that your approach, you know, that your recommendations have value and are insightful, and you know, those become differentiators. So even if you're offering something that's the same as everybody else, even if the RFPs require you to bid the exact same thing as everybody else, you can always differentiate what it is you're offering. And that differentiation, sometimes it's not what you offer, but how you offer it. And when you've got this common message, it runs from strategic planning through pre-RFP customer interactions into the proposal, then even though you're providing, you know, if you're in the IT business, the odds are you're providing the same services that all the other IT companies provide, or at least all the ones in your category. and you're all drawing from the same labor pool anyway. And if you're a service contractor, your capabilities really come down to who you can hire. So everybody ends up being the same, and that's kind of cynical, but I write proposals for a living,
you know. Yeah.
You can always, though, differentiate yourself, even though everybody's playing in the same, you know, sandbox. And when you differentiate yourself through your pre-RFP marketing as well as in the proposal, it's a lot more effective. So you're getting in front of, you know, the specific people you're targeting and delivering to them that message you want them to hear even before they get the proposal. You know, and that all comes back to what we talked about earlier with win rate. Yes, it is possible to increase your win rate, but you have to be strategic about it. And so you really have to do all of these things and do them in an integrated fashion.
Okay, so the differentiation, are we talking differentiation to the point of developing that subject matter expert platform in very specific areas?
We're talking about either pre-RFP or after the RFP comes out. Does the customer look at you and say they're not like everybody else? And can they articulate why? So marketing for a government contractor isn't just about getting your name out there. It's about getting your value proposition out there, getting the reasons why you matter out there. Because if you don't matter to your customer, you don't matter. That's why your win rate's so low. Because it doesn't matter. They don't need you. They can get something similar from everybody else. But if you do matter, you need to articulate that, and you need to articulate it in your pre-RFP customer interactions as well as in your proposal.
Cool. Carl, thank you so much for joining me. You can, again, find Carl at captureplanning.com and proplibrary.com. You come back this fall to speak at APMP or not?
I don't know whether it'll be an APMP event, but I've got a few others on my calendar.
Okay. Well, keep me posted and I'll let people know, or you'll be back on the show before then anyway. You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is not my day job. I advise companies on various aspects of building that subject matter expert platform, on leveraging social media and employing content to capture that right audience. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. Look me up on LinkedIn. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.